if somebody saw me in the practice, I'd want to see if the ability to make a fist, as an example, and an easy tool to use is a hand grip dynamometer, where you can see the amount of force used left with right.
Hands and wrists can be a challenging area for physiotherapists, particularly how to apply a treatment framework and a modern narrative to those joints. Today we spoke to Ian Gatt. He's the head of performance and lead physio for the Great Britain boxing team. He's got 20 years of experience in the upper limb. We covered imaging, diagnosis, prognosis, and using more of a modern narrative and milestone approach to treat hands and wrists. I hope you enjoy this episode. My name is Michael Risk, and this is Physio Explained. Hello, Ian. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having us.
We're going to talk about upper limb and specifically hand and wrist. And the question we were talking about offline was, why does pain linger? And something that may help with that is a distinction between traumatic and non-traumatic.
It's always interesting because when pain lingers, we always assume that there's something wrong. Yeah, especially with the wrists, I think sometimes people just almost want to shake it and listening to something rattle in there just to make them feel confident that there is a relationship between, you know, pain and something. It's interesting because, first of all, it depends whether it is traumatic or non-traumatic. You know, if it is traumatic, whether you're an athlete or not an athlete, because it's important that we don't just put the athletes in one box and then the non-athletes in another box. You know, if you fall onto your outstretched hand, whether you're an athlete or non-athlete, you could make the same type of injury. But the one thing to consider is, if it is traumatic, if you picked it from the day one, A, have you allowed it to rest the right way? Let's put it this way. You know, if you have a particular profession, you've not been able to rest something, it's going to linger a little bit just by that. It doesn't necessarily mean that you've done significant damage, but like anything else, you know, if you go over your ankle and it's painful and you keep walking onto it and you're asking yourself 4, 5, 6 days later why it's still achy, maybe 3 months later why it's still achy, you have to ask the question is, have you allowed structures that are meant to heal? But then with that, if you then go into a chronicity of traumatic, you know, I've seen sometimes people 12 months later, 18 months later, that maybe have had an episode of traumatic, and they're asking the question of, you know what, I've had the scans and it's still painful, and the scans say that there's nothing there, or, you know, you're starting to look at things. And I know we'll talk a bit more in this in detail in a bit. But then you have to ask the question is, has something actually healed now? And it should have healed by now. And why is the pain still lingering? And I think the first thing to learn is that pain and injury don't necessarily correlate. And, you know, one of my biggest learning experiences was at the London 2012 Games, where we had the polyclinic. I knew the radiographers because they're people we use regularly and we still use them these days. And they set up the polyclinic for everybody in the world. They did over 2,500 scans for all the athletes and non-athletes that came through. And when I spoke to them after the games, I said, can you just tell me something about what you found? And they said, the fact that with what we were seeing on the scans and what somebody could do, there wasn't that correlation. So what they were basically saying is that you could have bad damage coming up in a scan, but the things that people can do is beyond what you think you can do from just the scans. So I think that just don't chase scans, for me, is one of those bumper stickers I would definitely put so that people don't chase me or the scans, really. And then you mentioned the non-traumatic. I think with the non-traumatic, you need to ask yourself, the first thing is it really non-traumatic? Like, have you definitely not done something, you know, on the weekend you are hammering something, you forgot about it, but the pain came 3 or 4 days later. Maybe you slipped on the ice and caught yourself a bit badly. So when we say non-traumatic, is it 100%? Is it overuse? You know, have you done certain things? Have you increased the load? It's still a form of trauma. So I think digging a bit deeper is important, because to actually say non-traumatic completely, idiopathic to use other words, you know, it's literally come out of blue sky, then you have to ask yourself, okay, is there something I need to worry about? Is there a red flag? Is this the sort of something which is linked to their orange age group? Is there something within the family history? Is there anything there which I should actually worry about from the person in front of me? Are there anything else which I can see within the wider signs and symptoms, and maybe even things I can pick in, you know, even sometimes looking at the hand, we know sometimes the nail beds can give some more information, any deformations, you know, we talk about rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, but is there something there that we definitely don't want to miss? So I think it's important that we really have a good chat about the history and what they're trying to tell us, really. The last thing for me is when they say, okay, I've come to see you because I have pain. All right. I like to talk about pain. What's the nature of pain? What's the irritability? What's the 24-hour pattern? It's something which we've learned at uni. I know some people sometimes are a bit like, well, what does a 9 out of 10 mean? I'll be like, yeah, you're right. Probably 9 out of 10 means nothing, but it's worth asking them what a 9 out of 10 means, because you say, okay, what is a 9 out of 10 for you? Is it the classical, tell me, have you ever been to the dentist? And what does that mean? Because I can tell you that can be horrible. That's a 20 out of 10 sometimes. So if then I tell you a 9 out of 10 is that, but 20 out of 10 is a dentist, it correlates at least to them. So it's trying to understand really what are they trying to tell you. And also with all that, what can they do? Because we go so quickly in the pain and the scans and all the negative elements, we sometimes miss the fact that they probably drove to see you, probably used their wrist. They probably, you know, were carrying a bag on the way in. Who knows? They probably managed to do their job today. They probably managed to do lots of things. So they come to see you sometimes. They're really worried about something. But when you explore it further, you find that actually 20% of things is what they can do. 10% may be really important, an important goal, but there's a lot they can do. And I think for me then is trying to explore what can they do? Are there things I can do objectively to almost prove to them and to me that they can do things before I start scratching my head too long?
I like what does that pain mean to you? And I also like highlighting what they can do, almost a Louis Gifford pink flag, get them feeling good about what's happening with their wrist. Can I take you back to, you were saying that it's quite common that people won't rest enough, particularly in a traumatic injury. I see a lot of young health professionals in Australia, and I think one, it's hard to rest a wrist, like you said. And I do see that mistake a lot, is being too conservative, or maybe something weak like a K-tape or neoprene instead of a strong brace. Do you have any reflections on that?
I always think that rest is relative. I think, you know, back in the days, the model was rest it, take time out of work, don't do anything. And I think having worked now 20 years in sports and more, you learn that the one thing you can never tell an athlete and a coach is do nothing. There will be times where you want to try and offload that. So, you know, I work predominantly in boxing, and if somebody has an injury which is so severe, let's put it this way, that they can't impact, the good thing is they can use the other hand. So you can still teach somebody to do things one-handed. So if I tell somebody, hit the bag with just the right hand or the left hand, your lead hand or your backhand, depends what stance you are, it still means that they can do something, and it still means they can gain something out of it. In that case, then what I need to ask the question is, what is the information I have to allow me objectively to tell somebody what to do? Now, you know, if I had zero knowledge of the wrist and I injured my own hand, you obviously have to work it out on your own. And sometimes, you know, if it's really bad, you can't even grab a glass, you'd know that's not good. And after a few days, you think, I probably need to speak to somebody about this. But I think there's a lot of things we can do objectively, even at home. I've done online consultations through COVID, and, you know, I've learned to do more online consultations. And, you know, range of motion, you can get somebody just to move things. But these days, if you are working with somebody online, you can even use easy software where you can measure. So you can get somebody literally doing movements to try and see the ranges and actually calculate them. You say, okay, just hold that for a second. I'm going to take a still picture and compare it with your other side. I tend to use, for example, if somebody saw me in the practice, I'd want to see if the ability to make a fist, as an example, and an easy tool to use is a hand grip dynamometer, where you can see the amount of force used left with right. I've mentioned this over the years. We've even published some studies within boxing just to show sort of different trends from injured and uninjured. But if somebody was online and I can't just send them a hand grip dynamometer, which maybe costs, you know, 400, 500 quid, I'd say, okay, tell you what, grab a glass and see if you can squeeze that glass or a bottle as much as you can. Okay, no pain, great. Can you make a fist and almost do a few of these and squeeze through that? Okay, that's fine, depending on their demographic, but can you go on your knees and put some weight through your knuckles? Can you put some more weight one side or the other side? Okay, can you do a push-up now? Can you push yourself off the bed or off the chair? So there's a lot of things you can do functionally where they can actually tell you something. You know, if somebody says, okay, I'm going to put some, oof, that's, nah, oof, that's still, that's different from somebody saying, oh yeah, I can do 20 of those, no problem, but my wrist is really bad, I think. You're going, well, from what you've just told me to what you actually think, and then you can try and rationalize it with them. I think that helps also the direction of travel that somebody wants to take, because one of the things I always talk about is diagnosis versus prognosis. And what I mean by that is it's important to know what types of structures there are anatomically, what type of injuries you can have, and respecting, you know, your bone, your ligaments, your healing times. That's all the stuff that you learn as a therapist, as a physician. You know, you have that logged at the back of your head. So you have that, you're respecting all that. But when somebody's telling you, this is what I can do, and you're making them do certain functional abilities, hopefully what that starts doing, one, it starts crossing things very quickly, but also makes you think, do I really need to scan this person in front of me? In that case, then I would be scanning every wrist I see, which would be forever. And a scan for me doesn't give me all the information. In fact, a lot of people tell me, look, I'm going to send you a scan. Can you tell me what I have? And I say, no, don't do that. Because the last thing I want to see is the scan. Because one, I don't want to be biased, but also I want to see what you're able to do, especially if somebody tends to see me when things can be quite chronic over time. You know, they're still lingering with problems. They're still struggling with certain things. Now, it doesn't mean that I shouldn't think that something underneath might not be going well. You know, there might be mild union of a bone if there was a fracture in the very beginning. Maybe there is some ligament instability which wasn't picked out in the very beginning also. But that will hopefully come also with the sort of function that we've assessed. And ideally, we've got something more quantifiable with numbers. And let's say, for example, we give them an initial rehab approach. And when I say initial rehab, it's not like I'm going to give you a few bands and whatever. Ideally, you think, okay, is range the problem, measure it, and then a way to remeasure it, because otherwise you're just eyeballing it. If you think it's a strength, it's one of things. Is there a way to measure it and then remeasure it? And as I said, push-ups with a knuckle, that can be a good objective measure. You're using body weight, and then you're using things. Other things you can use at home is a scale. We go on the scales to see how much we've weighed, especially after Christmas. Get them to load through that, and they can give you a number, and they can tell you how much pain they have, and use that as a number, subjective to that. So there are ways of measuring things and then seeing whether, if you give an intervention, whether then you can see that there is some form of improvement. Because sometimes they could tell you, I'm not sure I'm improving. And then they tell you, okay, let me do the remeasurements you're telling me. And well, actually, oh yeah, no, it seems a bit better. Now, that's the point where I go, all right, did I make sure I knew what their goal was from the very beginning? Because that's another mistake we do, a lot of us as therapists. So I'm one of those self-proclaimed therapists that literally looks for all the objective measures possible. Not many, but the least amount, but the things that are going to give me the money for my buck. One, two, three, little amount of time, but at least you've got range of motion, strength, something functional that's digged. But what I can't fall into the trap of is that becomes the goal. It's part of the process. It's a measuring tool. but that measuring tool is not the goal. It's like me saying, okay, I need to hang a picture on the wall. The goal is not the ruler. The ruler is there to help in the process and give you a measuring tool. And if you have more sophisticated laser type rulers, oh, fantastic. That's really, really good. But I think sometimes we fall in the trap of thinking, oh, I've got a ruler and this is the goal. It's not. So we need to ask them from the very beginning, what do you want to achieve? And if somebody says, I don't know, I just want to be pain-free, it's okay. It's trying to get that in context. Okay, but you are pain-free when you're doing certain things. So what are you really trying to achieve here? What is the one thing which you know that if you achieve that, that'd be really good? Oh, yeah, well, if I could go and do this back on a weekend. Okay, so that's what we want to get to. We're going to probably have a few milestones along the way. Let's try and understand it. The other thing for me is the hands and wrists. They're quite interesting because you see them all the time. People do also the bad habit of touching the wrists when they're painful. There's a big representation also of the homunculus in the brain, which I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing. I sometimes take the bad thing, which it could be big representation. We know that you touch fire, we have that reaction, which is self-preservation, not to keep your hand there forever. So we know that we have a very low threshold for pain around certain regions. Now, it doesn't mean everybody is the same because everybody has a different things. But even boxers who learn how to hit with their hands, trust me, if they have an injury, it is quite painful. So I think their threshold goes down very much too.
I really like the milestone approach you take there. And I love what you say about get the objective measures to help and it highlights for the patient, but that's not the goal. I think that's really helpful because, again, offline we were talking about with wrists and hands particularly, physios can be a little bit weaker in that area. They can tend to either just tape it and leave it or just get a scan way too quickly. I think that's a real nice approach. Ian, we're out of time today, but yeah, can you direct us to where we can find more about you and where we can upskill on hands and wrists?
Definitely. If people want to follow me for whatever reason, you can find me on Twitter. You find me as Ian Gatt Physio or The Boxing Physio, bit of a trademark there. You'll find me on LinkedIn. You'll find me even on Instagram, but particularly on Twitter and LinkedIn, I share a lot of the areas where I teach or education or articles. Just ask the questions. But remember, the hands and wrists, yes, they are complicated, but we can uncomplicate them by going simple again, going back to the basics and understanding those basics.
That's a great tip to end on. And thank you for your time today, Ian.
Thank you very much, Michael.